Welcome into the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Boy, do we have an interesting show today, folks. I told you I'd have a surprise for you here on this Thursday, and I do. We're going to go just a little bit south and a little bit east from Minnesota here, and we're going to talk today about a really cool idea, really cool convention that's going on in the Windy City in Chicago. It's taking place next month in June 12th through the 15th, Windy City Paranormal Festival. It's not just a regular paranormal convention. And I know some of you might be a little burnt out on the paranormal conventions. This is like no other convention that you're going to see out there. I guarantee you that. In fact, I'm going to encourage you to get out to Windy City Paranormal Festival because, as they put it, everyone deserves a seat at the seance. We're going to explain a little bit with the organizers of Windy City Paranormal Festival, and we're going to talk a little bit about their paranormal group and a brand new theory to the paranormal today. I want to welcome in my guests, and then we'll talk a little bit about what's going on at the Windy City Paranormal Festival. I want to welcome in for the first time to, one of them the first time, to Darkness Radio, Frankie Everly and Christina Rappel. Folks, welcome in.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
So, Windy City Paranormal Festival. Now, okay, I'm going to throw this right away, Frankie, at you. Now, I've been a part of other Chicago Paracons. See how I did that? Tell me how Windy City Paranormal Festival is different than, say, Chicago Paracon was.
So, you know, the main reason that we're saying fest instead of con is because while we love cons, I mean, I've loved every con I've gone to, but my favorite part of it is the sort of everybody hanging out at the bar afterwards, swapping stories and all that kind of stuff. And so we wanted to kind of lean into that and make it a storytelling event and make it all about the, like, the fun parts. Cause, you know, we didn't want to do another con because there's plenty of those and they're great. And we wanted to kind of separate ourselves and bring something new to the table.
Christina,
yes.
I've been looking over your guest list and your speaker list, and I'll tell you, it feels young and it feels energetic. To me, it doesn't feel like the same old, same old. So tell me, what goes into picking your speakers and picking the people that you've picked for this year?
Sure. I think really what went into it was the initial concept of giving a platform to voices that were being underrepresented. So we wanted to step in and really highlight voices that we knew had an excellent following, had a lot to say, a lot to bring to the paranormal community, but they weren't being given equal platform time when we went to conferences. And honestly, we went to conferences and we'd see a very strong male, heavy cast of wonderful people, not to, you know, in any way disrespect that, and maybe a token female here or there, maybe someone, you know, once in a great while who lived something as a different experience. But I just felt like there was really, I didn't feel represented. And I know that some of my team members felt that way. And other people in my life didn't seem to be represented in the community as a whole in that con scene. And I don't think it was intentional. I like to hope that it wasn't, but that was really where we decided that we wanted to kind of fill that need and start to encourage that. So in combination with Frankie's past of being a producer and our interest in creating that wonderful post con panel event feeling, we wanted to bring that with those voices to the paranormal and just create a whole nother experience.
Here's the other trick to this whole thing too. This is what I've learned from producing events in our past, is that you got to inject a little bit of fun into this whole thing too.
No, yeah.
It's all fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm finding that the fun part of it at times doesn't play into it. I know, and there's exceptions. Like when I went to Michigan Paracon, I'll give you that one. there was fun thrown into it. And I noticed that you've got some fun thrown into this, which is good. You've got a couple of, I shouldn't say a couple of, you've got a lot of fun thrown into this weekend. Tell me a little bit about some of the features that you have going on over the weekend.
Sure. We are going to kick off the entire event with a burlesque evening, a beautiful burlesque evening inspired by paranormal. And that will be our starting event. So this is highlighting Frankie's day jobs, shall we say, or his regular career in production. And we are then moving forward from there into the following day being a little different structure. We're letting people sleep in, starting things a little bit later so we can have a nice late evening.
Sleep in? What's sleeping in?
Right. We are generally a nighttime kind of group anyways. So
yeah, do you know how many things I missed at Michigan because they were at like 8 or 9 in the morning? I'm like, I want to go, but I'm hungover.
Right.
And we just decided we were going to let people sleep in. We were going to try and pace the events. And the following day, of course, we have some panels, but we're setting up our panels a little differently. And we're having storytelling panels with groups of presenters. And they have been given a little bit of instruction. And it should be really fun and adventurous. I think the first evening we wrap up with Paranormal Pictionary with Adam Berry, mm-hmm. which should be a great time. Anyone who's had the opportunity to see him at Michigan Paracon or anywhere else knows that he will make you laugh until your sides hurt.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And then from there, our following day, we have more amazing panels and we wrap it up with a haunted 80s prom. And in between there's quite a bit of whimsy that we have planned as well. Our team has a tradition of late night baking cookies after we investigate, or early morning usually. And we're making sure that we help to capture that experience at one point. We have been so lucky to have our wonderful host hotel allow us to have a private bar and space for our attendees, which will go into the early morning hours, hopefully, because we'll all be having such a good time.
Wow.
And yeah, I think it's just going to be so fun. And we already have come up just in this experience, and I'm sure we'll have many more ideas and some great feedback, but we've already come up with ideas of things we want to add for next year. So we're really excited about it.
Fantastic. See, you're bringing the fun. That's the key. It really is the key. So Frankie, Christina's already mentioned day job here for you. Tell me what you do during the day.
Well, for the past about 20 plus years since I was 4, I've been a producer in the burlesque world. So I've done everything. I used to produce the Burlesque Hall of Fame. And then I've got 2 long running shows in Chicago that have been going for, you know, both right up about the 10-year mark. And one of those is going to be our Thursday night opening show. It's my regular Thursday show. It's a great supper club, really beautiful experience. The food's amazing. The cocktails are amazing. And the cast is so excited. Like, they're all chomping at the bit because I normally let them get spooky in October, but they're like, we get to do this, you know, in June. They're so excited. So it's going to be, I mean, some of them haven't told me quite yet what they're doing because they want to keep me in the dark as well. So I'm going to be, you know, just as shocked as you guys are, I think.
That's fun. Part of the fun of the surprise, right?
Yeah.
It's you gotta have a little mystery to the whole thing. And, you know, I think I can speak for all patrons is you almost want the surprise there, you know, when you show up and it's something mm-hmm. new. You never want the same old, or you never want to walk into the same old. You don't want to sleepwalk into a festival or a convention or anything like that and know you're going to get hit with the same stuff every year. You want to.
Well, that's That's the thing with my cast in that world. I mean, that's my main family for years. Now the paranormal is kind of overlapping and becoming a more extended family. But these people, I've been working with some of them for years and years and years, and I trust them with my life. So knowing that I can just let them go off the chain and they're going to bring something that's just going to blow all of us away is like a load off. You know, that's like, I like being a spectator in that way.
So let me ask you this, Frankie, you're not anticipating anybody clutching their pearls at the burlesque show, are you?
Oh, quite possibly. I mean, I have gotten a lot of questions from folks who've never been to one, and I love that because they're like, what should we expect? And the thing is, I mean, people are going to take their clothes off. It's not a strip club. It's not like going to a strip club. But you, I mean, it's going to be body, and there's going to be sword swallowing. There's going to be, you know, tassels and, you know, all sorts of stuff. So, I mean, it's a really fun event, and you might clutch a pearl or two.
So as someone who, I would say I was in my early 30s the first time I attended a burlesque event. Mm-hmm. And I can just say from my point of view, it completely changed my image of myself to see such diversity across the board and to see such like complete artistic creation and passion. It was sometimes shocking, but that's what art is supposed to do, is to wake you up and make you think, but also to just see so many people just feeling so comfortable in sharing that in their vulnerability of creating something beautiful and meaningful and sometimes funny, sometimes a little spooky. Like, I just, it changed my world. So I think that even if someone isn't used to that environment and that scene, they know that that's what they're coming to, and just look at it as the artistic performance that it is, and you will have an amazing time.
The reason I say that, Christina, is this. One year for Chicago Paracon, we brought myself and Ian Xavier. We brought in wrestling for the promoters at the promoter's request. There was a lot of people who really thought it was a cool idea. There were a few people who were like, wrestling? What do you want wrestling at a paranormal convention for? But you'd be amazed how many people thought it was a cool idea, and you have no idea how those two worlds cross and how often they cross, right? I don't know why I'm doing this, but I am on video.
I'm
crossing the streams right now with my fingers.
Crossing worlds right now, yeah.
But it looked kind of weird. But those worlds cross quite often. And when we got a ring in there in the ballroom, and we got the boys out there wrestling, and unfortunately we didn't have enough girls out there to get wrestling, but we got the boys out there wrestling. And people got to appreciate it up close and personal. The few that had questions all of a sudden didn't have questions. Mm-hmm. It fit.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden it fit. It was part of the night's entertainment, and it was okay. And basically you just lined up exactly what I was hoping you were going to line up there, Christina. And that's that. When you get people together and they get to see an art form, it doesn't matter whether it's ballet, wrestling, burlesque, whatever it is. People who are there for one thing can get together and appreciate art for what it is. And they can see it for what it is. And
my little crossover, the host of the show on that night is she's a wrestler, and she's the daughter of Eddie Guerrero. So,
oh, Shawl?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, you know Shawl? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've met her. Yeah. Yeah. I've met her.
Yeah. She's host of our show, and she's going to be, she's amazing.
Yeah. She's friends with Chris Jericho, and we were on the Jericho Network at one time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So I think I met her. I'm trying to remember where I met her, but I've met her. I'm not friends with her or anything, but I've met her, an acquaintance. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. That's amazing. That's great. So
it's a small world.
It's a very small world indeed.
Indeed.
Well, see, one more reason for people to come out.
Absolutely.
I have a huge amount of people who watch wrestling on that listen to and watch the show. So there you go. So there you go. It, and you know, I'm glad that we get to talk a little bit about the burlesque part of it, because again, burlesque is a wonderful art form. I think people should go out and even for that, to see the art form itself, I think is a wonderful opportunity at the festival, just to be able to be exposed to that as part of it. So, it's a wonderful thing you're doing, is to be able to put that on as part of the festival. I want to talk a little bit about just a few of the speakers, because I think a few of the speakers I'm huge fans of. On this very program, I had Juwan and Joshua on, and we had a wonderful time on the program. I think they're two of the most brilliant investigators out there in the field right now. And when we had them here on the program, I think the two of them might be doing a project together soon. So, I'm a huge fan of Joshua. I don't know if anyone's got to, I don't know, I shouldn't say, I don't know if anyone's got to see his videos. I think hundreds of thousands of people see his videos.
Oh, they're amazing.
Whenever he posts a video. But talk about an up and coming star in the paranormal.
He's prolific. I'm always in awe of just how much he churns out, because it's not his job. Like he runs a whole empire of coffee.
But, I mean, just, I think between Juwan and Joshua, you're talking about two guys who, I mean, are making waves into the future, right? This is, I mean, they're here and now, but you're talking about 5-10 years down the road. These are two guys who, you know, are going to be steering our industry into the future and beyond, and are making waves into the beyond, which.
Yeah, for sure.
Indeed. And to me, it's really, really evident just how passionate they are about it and how devoted they are. And I think that I just want to celebrate that. I see that across the board with the entire lineup that we have. And I really enjoy that. Mm-hmm. There's no one coming to this to be a part of it that is just like, oh yeah, once in a while.
Yeah.
It's really, really their passion and their interest.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Heather Taddy, another lady who with Travel the Dead, again, they're doing huge numbers over at Travel the Dead, who is incredibly intelligent, on the ball, not just your ghost lady, but knows everything everywhere about all things paranormal. I've done panels with her. I've tried to shake her in every area of the paranormal everywhere. I've had multiple opportunities on the show to do it. I can't do it.
Not even about Bigfoot. That was when I saw that, I was like, oh, Heather, that's my goal now, is just to get you to just move an inch on the Bigfoot.
Move an inch on Bigfoot. Yep. So if you can do it, Frankie, if you can do it, that's my challenge to you.
Oh, I tease her all the time about it.
But yeah, she's something special. She really is. So I'm again impressed that you have her out there. Tani Lewis, tell me a little bit about Tani Lewis, because I'm impressed with her as well. She's an up and comer, and
she's kind of exploded onto the scene too. I mean, when we first started talking, she had a following and a profile, but even since, in the months since, now she's working with Zach, and she's doing all these big things, and it's. I mean, she is a very intuitive and kind and empathetic and just whip smart person. I'm really glad to have her in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. The line of Ken Bogle. Ken Bogle is on board. And again, the list that, and of course, I love John Tenney.
He's paranormal sweetheart, right? You can't have a paranormal event without John Tenney. You just can't.
And if you tried, I think he would still show up. So there's
he might.
There's that. Yeah. He'd still be knocking on your door.
Yeah, I think it's legally you have to have him.
Yeah. Yeah. So are you having the What's Up Weirdo podcast actually on stage during this deal?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
They're going to do, they're not quite sure what they're doing yet, but it's going to be something akin to what they do in the podcast. It's just going to be them on stage with mics. And I don't know. I'm my money's on a fight.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, there should be action on that deal. So
we might have wrestling after all.
There you go. See? Well, you better have a belt made up before.
My money's on Jess.
Jessica will take that one easily.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All she's got to do is pull that sport coat over John's head and start punching and that and have Toad bite his ankles. And I think it's all done. So, yeah, that's pretty much the match. You know,
oh, I would pay to say that.
I would too. That's worth the price of admission alone.
We could probably get that choreographed, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Who needs it choreographed? Total go right for the ankles the minute the sport coat goes over the head. Yeah.
We just have to make John look like a stuffy and then Total be in. That's right.
That's right.
I do have a surprise for John though. So I'm sure he listens to this, but I'm planning his walkout song.
Oh, he has a walkout song, really?
Yeah, I'm gonna give him a walkout. He hasn't asked for one, but I'm gonna give him one, and it's gonna be weird.
Oh, excellent. All right, well, I guess he heard it here first, huh?
Promises, boy, you better live up to that.
I guess, right?
I mean, how do you out weird John? You just that's a difficult thing, so I'm trying.
You're trying.
Yeah.
God, you're going to drop that hint and not tell us.
Maybe the love boat theme.
Oh.
Now, that's not weird enough, but it would be appropriate.
That's not weird enough. Appropriate. Yeah. Yeah.
It would be appropriate, but yeah. Interesting. So you also have a haunted 80s prom coming up during this deal.
Indeed. Yes. What do you want to know?
How does that work, first of all? Because I've seen proms in the past at different events, but how does a haunted 80s prom work?
Well, our attendees are welcome to come in costume or in prom attire, or they can just come as they are as well. But we're hoping that people will get into the spirit of it. And I know we as a team have been doing some 80s rewatches of movies and helped us make a decision on a costume for the team. And okay. Yeah, I think, you know, it's otherwise it's a dance and a good time and another social event. But we decided to put a little spin on it. And
will there be a photo booth?
An idea.
A photo? Pardon? Will there be a photo booth?
That is in the works.
Okay.
As we speak. Right. I think we might actually end up having a live photographer doing photos for us.
All right.
Yeah, that's the goal.
Real prom style.
Okay. There you go. All right.
Yeah, I really wanted, my whole goal for the thing, the reason, like when I was like, oh, I want to do this haunted 80s prom is because I wanted an excuse to buy the jacket that Alex Winter wears in Lost Boys, that crazy thing.
Yeah.
But then the team was like, oh, we're going to do this. And it's a team effort for a costume. And I'm so excited about it because it's perfect for us. It is like exactly our team.
Yes. Right. Well, so then next year for the jacket.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to push for a haunted 90s or 2000s prom because I know that we look immortal, but I think that we are probably going to please a few more people if we maybe move the timeline up a little bit.
Are you calling me old?
Somewhere between 32 and 60.
Wow. Second time already. They didn't hear the first time.
I know. But if anyone's paying attention, they know that I pull that out on Frankie frequently.
Oh, yeah. So. I have a thick skin. Because I'm between the ages of 32 and 60.
Well, when you've lived that long, you get a thick skin. It's called calluses. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that
either. I love it. Jump right in, Tim.
Wow. That hurts. It hurts my old bones to hear them say that about you, Frankie.
That's okay.
Yeah. Tell you what, we'll take our break here because Frankie needs to recover. And when we come back, we'll talk about, actually, we have, you've been mentioning your group. I don't know if I can say the acronym or not. I could say the acronym, but I will leave it for you. I'll just say it's the Wisconsin Apparition Tracking Society.
AKA twats.
There you go. You said it, not me. Because if I say it, then I get in trouble, but I'll let you say it. I'll say it later.
Okay.
Just for fun. And then I'll giggle and do this. We'll talk about some of your investigations. We'll talk about a new theory you have in the paranormal that I've heard about. I've just heard about it in passing, but I need to hear this. I need to hear this up close and personal. And then, you also have some stories for us, some interesting stories. I happen to hear one about David Bowie that I need to hear personally. So I've been promised a David Bowie story. I need to hear it, damn it. So that's all I know. But we've got
all
more.
All right.
We've got more with Frankie Everly and Christina Rappel coming up. And remember, folks, tickets are available right now for the Windy City Paranormal Festival. We have a link in the description of this program. You can also get them at windycityparafest.com. So,
and if you use the code DARKNESS, you get 10% off.
Oh, there you go. Well, thank you, Frankie. Appreciate it.
Of course.
See, you're pretty nice for an old guy. So when we come back, more with Frankie and Christina.
Come on.
Next on the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. With me, Frankie Everly and Christina Rappel. They are the organizers of the Windy City Paranormal Festival. And they have this cool paranormal group, the Wisconsin Apparition Tracking Society. Christina, otherwise known as?
Twats.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Anytime.
We're
going to have you saying it by the end.
Yeah, I will say it by the end, but I just...
You won't offend.
Are you sure?
I'm positive. That's why, I picked out the team name. So
okay.
I'm very comfortable with it. It took a little convincing with two of our teammates, and we jumped right in.
I am going to show people the logo here. There's the logo right there. That's a cool
done
logo.
By my husband. Yes.
It's very
yes.
cool. Yeah. I like it. It's very cool.
Thank you. Yeah.
Do you sell shirts with the logo on it?
We did have a Teespring store up, and my husband of Crusher Vision Art Industries has done all of the design work for us and has been doing some design work for the festival as well. But unfortunately, that business sold, and I went in and ordered some T-shirts. About 4 months ago, and mm-hmm. I just recently had to go through a dispute and cancel my order because I guess across the internet, they're just not shipping. They lost their contracts. And so I am looking for a new home for the team T-shirt store.
Really?
That will be coming probably after the festival.
Okay. Well, we can absolutely add them to the fest store. I didn't know that.
Ooh,
that bit, but yeah, we can
idea.
Do that.
Sure.
Yeah. Cause Crusher Vision did our fest shirt and it's amazing. It's an everybody deserves a seat at the seance shirt. And it's like no notes. It's gorgeous.
Well, there you go. See, Christina, we got you together with Frankie. I mean, I know there's probably
if only
meetings.
We talked.
Yeah.
If only
you guys talked
things
yeah.
off of air, off yeah. of the air. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Perfect.
Well, now we have a solution. We can get the twats together with the festival.
there you go. Great idea. It's almost like we're co-producing this or something.
Almost. Almost, but not quite, but almost. So tell me a little bit, Christina, about some of the investigations you've been on.
Oh, sure. Well, I'll start by saying that the team began as an all-woman team. There were four of us. And sadly, one of our team members just through life ended up deciding to step away from the team. And in that process, I had taken Frankie along for one of our investigations, and he just fit right in. And we made the decision to include him in the team. And he was a you know, happy to join. And so now it is myself, our friends Kimberly and Denise and Frankie. And we have been, let's see, what is our most recent? Our most recent investigation was in Watseka, Illinois, at the Roff House, which we now as a team refer to as the Roff Clifton House after our investigation. And we had the honor of investigating with Nicole and Noel of the Quite Unusual podcast and Catherine from Ice Cream You Scream podcast. And we spent a weekend. The Roff House is now an Airbnb. We were able to spend the weekend there. And for those who don't know the story of the Watseka Wonder, it is the first documented and recorded reporting of possession in the United States officially. So that was really quite the adventure in our investigation there. We like to incorporate a little bit of magic. I have been a longtime practicing witch, and we like to approach things just a little bit differently. And our investigation there was amazing. We ended up having the opportunity to go to the local cemetery and visit the graves of some of the people that we had made contact with and left them some things as just an offering and a gift for their communication and building that bond. But it was a wonderful time. It was like having a sleepover when you're, you know, a kid with a bunch of fun people and speaking with ghosts. The woman who came through most frequently was actually a much later owner of the home. And she was really an incredible woman for her time. I believe she lived in the home somewhere in the 30s and 40s and just a little bit beyond. But her stepfather was a judge who he left her the home. She ended up basically managing the entire area of farms for thousands and thousands of acres. She flew a plane herself. She was a pilot. She ran her own business. She built the now town hall that they have there and courthouse. And she was just really a kind of an amazing badass woman, to quote our friends. And she really made herself known to us, and it was an incredible experience. We hope to go back, but that was our last investigation that we went on.
Let me take you back for a second. You say you're practicing witch, you use your abilities and whatnot in your investigation. Tell me how you incorporate it. I'm curious as to how you
do it. Yeah, really, very lightheartedly. So nothing, I would compare it, say, to someone considering doing a prayer or grounding outside before they go into an investigation. Instead, we use the experience of learning how to almost use meditation in magical practice, sharing energy, connecting to one another, sending that energy out into the space from ourselves, with the offering of communication without pressure. And making sure that we're very slow and intentional about our communication. And I do this through the structure of spell work.
Okay.
And it's really done in a way that I'm trying to heighten the calling forth of the communication. In my opinion, it's not our job to go there and solve any crisis. It's not our position that we're going there to clear a space of anything or free someone that's trapped. I don't really believe in that theory personally, but we're there just to listen and to enjoy the possibility that we can cross time and space and have some sort of connection that way.
All right, now, correct me if I'm wrong here, Christina, with witchcraft comes a certain amount of discernment, right? So are you feeling like you can almost read the room in a way when you walk into somewhere that's haunted? Is it easier for you to read the room when you walk into a haunted place than it would be, like, say, for someone who's dead as a stone psychically?
Well, I do have psychic abilities as well, so I can't say that I know what it would be like as someone who's just a practicing witch who doesn't have that ability. But I do believe that those of us who practice magic and those of us who also do paranormal investigation, we do become more sensitive over time, the more time we spend doing it. So even if someone tells me, look, I don't have any abilities, if they've been investigating long enough, you might walk into a space and just say, something feels off here to me. And I do believe that anyone can learn to open up abilities and that no one is blocked from doing it, but it's maybe not someone's interest, or maybe that's not the approach that they want to take in jumping in and working on that skill. So I think because of my upbringing, because of my abilities naturally, and then the focus that I've put on growth in that department, along with the fact that that is part of my spiritual practice in doing witchcraft, bringing that all together, yes, I do think I can walk into a space and feel things. There's also times where I'm very intentional to close that down so that I'm not being disrespectful when I go into spaces. Say if I'm going into someone's home to visit with them, it'll push back and I might sense it, but I try not to pry.
Do you feel like someone who says, oh, I'm a skeptical, a ghost hunter, I'm a skeptical paranormal investigator, someone who denies that even if they've been in this field for 10, 15 years, you say that, you know, the more you're in the field, the more you probably are opening up the ability to become somewhat intuitive. Do you feel like they're pushing back against that ability, that they're pushing back against nature, so to speak?
I think they're pushing back against developing the ability. I look at it like artwork. We all start out, you know, some of us start out just drawing stick figures and then very quickly grow into being able to really capture the image of a person or a thing or a place. And then some of us just kind of stop at the stick figure because it doesn't really interest us. But that doesn't mean that we don't like to look at art and experience art. So I think of it the same way.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I find it interesting to watch certain investigators over, especially having, you know, been in the field now for a couple of decades, just watching certain people progress in their careers and how they've changed, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say who or when or how, or because I've seen a whole bunch of people in these past couple of decades and how they operate, and you'll see how different people have changed, right? From even the last 5 years, 10 years, 15 years.
Absolutely.
And it's not necessarily positive or negative. It's just, you're right. It you can't stay in this field and not change your outlook as to how you look at how things progress in an investigation, right? Mm-hmm. You could start out like coming into a haunted location and think, well, you know, it's us against them. Well, no, it's not that. Or you could walk into it thinking, well, it's just another human soul. I treat them like I would treat, you know, a stranger in a household, or you know, or another human being that's come into my house, or you know, I relate to them like another human being. Or you change your outlook every single time you walk into another haunting, right? You either approach it adversarially or with respect, one or the other. And it's amazing how your questioning, your line of questioning starts when you start an EVP session, from the first time you do it to the last time you do it, right? Over the years. And it's funny to watch people on their first investigation when they ask questions, and the person who's been doing it for 10 years, the minute they crack open a recorder, and, you know, how they've changed their questions. My question to you then, and Frankie, as a newly recruited 32 to 60 year old twat, I want to ask you.
That's going on my business card.
Yeah, it should. When you went along with the group, was it your first investigation ever, or had you done other investigations? And how did it feel to you to go along with them? And did you see different things than what you'd seen before? And was it what you were expecting, or how did it change your outlook on?
Yeah, it was. I didn't know what to expect. I mean, I'd watched shows, so I knew that was kind of it. But then I also, like, I'm in the entertainment industry, so I know that shows, you know, TV is not an accurate representation of life. I did expect to be frightened and scared more than I am. And there's definitely been some times, but what I found, especially with the approach that our team has, is that, like, we often have really great experiences, really empathetic, really almost like life-giving. I mean, the thing at Rough House, I was kind of expecting, you know, we're going to be scared here because it's a bit of a scary story. People have been coming in investigating for a long time and adding their own energy to it. But when Ms. Clifton came through and gave us this whole other experience that was, I mean, I had doing a version of Estes, like, I was hearing this music, this like choral music that I still can't explain. I've been trying to write and journal about it. I still can't tell you what I heard, but I still hear it, and it's gorgeous, you know? So I didn't really know what to expect, but what I found is that, the approach that we take is just really cool. It's really fun. It's very respectful. You know, we do love the spooky and the scary, but that's not the only note in this whole thing, you know? And that's one of the things I really love about the presenters that we have as well, is because we're finding that, like, we thought this was kind of a unique thing, and we have a unique take on it, but pretty much everyone that we're getting to know and we're talking to, they have a similar approach. It's like, maybe that's the youth of it all, or whatever it is. But I mean, I'm seeing a combination of the science coming to it that is more about, like, metaverse and, you know, all these kind of things that it could, or quantum physics and that thing, which is really exciting. And then this idea that these are likely energies or spirits or whatever that are people and human related, so we can treat them like that. We don't have to kick down the door and go, you know, talk to me, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a whole, it's a generation, but I mean, I don't mean that as an age, because John Tenney is the same way as Rockette Fox, and John's been in the thing for decades, and Rockette's brand new in the scene, and they're taking very similar approaches. So I think there's a generation of empathy and kindness and, like, joy that's coming to it that is really exciting for me.
And I'd like to jump in there and say that the more direct or confrontational way that was popular, I think, for a while in investigation, driven, of course, also by television as well, people's misunderstanding and just maybe their own different take on it, that shouldn't be overlooked, though, in its contribution to creating what is the current, more frequent, I think, process that things are leaning towards, and that is being respectful and patient, and maybe looking at things scientifically a little bit differently, and pushing ourselves and questioning things. I've recently started bringing in different tuning forks and tones to use in our opening meditation, mainly because I really think there's something there with that association with sound and frequency and pitch. And for example, in this investigation in Watsika, one of the first things that Frankie and I looked at each other as we were unpacking things in the kitchen, and both said, oh, wow, we can really feel a large group of people outside of the walls around us looking in. there really wasn't a presence in the house. It was outside observing. And this was a huge spiritualist community when the story actually took place in history. And it very much so felt like that. I've had the opportunity to go to Lilydale. I've had the opportunity to be at other spiritualist centers. And I could very much so feel that this was a group of people who worked together. So when I structured our spell, I made sure to structure it in a way that was very evident to them, in a practice that was very evident to them, that let them know that we understood that portion of their life and what that meant for them. And without those previous investigators before us, we wouldn't be at this point. So I love to think about the fact that it's all contributed. There's no loss in the fact that those things happened or that people investigate differently.
Well, without the blueprint, you really can't go forward, right? So you absolutely have to have the building blocks in order to move forward and do what it is you need to do in order to sail the, you need the ship before you can sail the ocean.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah. And don't get me wrong. I love the television shows and I love to be scared out of my gourd, you know, but I think, again, I think there's several notes in this piece of music that we're calling the paranormal investigation community, right? There's, you know, and that's what I find really fascinating about what is happening.
Well, the old joke is this, and it still remains true today. If you were to do a true show about paranormal investigating, 4 hours in the dark is not going to sell on TV. It's just not. It's,
yeah,
you know, it's 4 hours sitting around in the dark is not going to thrill sponsors.
With like Cheeto breaks and cookie breaks.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's like arguing with equipment. If you decide that that's what you're doing for the night. You
know? Yeah.
That's whole, not good TV. I mean, we're hilarious to ourselves, but unless you're there in the moment, I agree completely.
Yeah, the whole setting up equipment and sitting there and looking at the ceiling and telling fart jokes is not going to make a great TV show.
Or being so frustrated that you really did charge your equipment, but the rest of your team is like,
And then the catty comments behind each other's backs to the one cameraman
caught on the recorders that you have to listen to later.
I mean, all that shit won't play. I know that much. So you had mentioned that you were doing different things with different sounds. Is that part of the rogue wave theory that we talked about in emails? Is that the new theory that we're talking about?
No, that's my like current bonkers interpretation of all this stuff that I've been toying with since I, right after the first of the year, when I just finished a huge show and I just crawled in bed for like 3 days and watched like bad YouTube videos. I ended up in this like shipwrecks rabbit hole. And then that turned into all these shows about all these like documentaries about the rogue waves that sink ships.
Okay.
And how there's a whole, I think it's in Nova Scotia. There's like this giant like airplane hangar of water that can make waves and all these things because they're trying to figure out how to, you know, make ships better and you know, not sink. And they cannot make a rogue wave, even though they have all the math and they have all the stuff. And so I just kind of went down that rabbit hole. And the concept of a rogue wave is that there isn't a way to predict it. There isn't a way to create it. It's a wave that ends up being like more than the sum of its parts. Okay. It's a monster that's created, and they don't really know how, but every ingredient, every piece of that particular moment has to be right, including the ship being there. If the ship isn't there, there's no rogue wave. There'll be something, but not that. The ship has to be at whatever angle. We know all these things that they just don't understand. And I was going down that hole and I went, oh, that I think is like very similar to investigating the paranormal. Like we have all these things that we try. We have the tools and the flashlights, and we've got, you know, psychic ability, we've got darkness, we, you know, all these things that we're used to get one little like, oh, what'd they say, you know, on the EVP. And that might be a rogue wave. That might be a huge thing that every possible ingredient was right in that one moment and wasn't going to be right in the next moment, including the people that were there in the position that they were sitting, you know, all of these things that we just, we can't do again. You know, you get an EVP and you go, oh, do it again. Well, no, because that was a, maybe that was a rogue wave, you know, maybe everything was right in that moment for the veil to be crossed or whatever the physics are behind all of the stuff. And that, you know, to me, it was kind that was a bit reassuring because like you were saying, sometimes at a investigation, you're just like, oh my God, it's been 4 hours. We've got nothing, you know, or what worked last. We were here a year ago and we got all these things, but we're back. We're not getting them. You know, this is such a thing that we don't understand yet that to get just these little tiny bits of evidence, if you want to call it at that, takes an enormous amount of things being correct. And it's, I don't know.
You're onto it. Yeah. And you're right. There's a humongous amount of, I mean, not just RF energy that has to go into it, as we're finding out, or EMF that has to go into it in order to push that boundary and mm-hmm. get that signal either onto tape or onto video or whatever it is you're using at the time. But like you mentioned, maybe there has to be a bit of psychic energy that has to go into it. There has to be intent that has to go into it. There has to be a calming of wind. I mean, because let's face it, if wind hits your recorder just a certain amount away, it can block out any signal that may move that diaphragm on that microphone that may catch that particular bit of energy that's trying to come your way, and it may blow that EVP away that you're trying to capture. You know, all conditions have to be right, in order for it to manifest.
For like the smallest bit of, you know, evidence.
Right. So, yeah, you're right. Everything does have to be almost perfect. With that being said, we sure do catch a lot of EVP. Mm-hmm. So it's not rare,
right?
But it's rarer, right? It's not like saying, well, it's as rare as trying to find a dire wolf in the wild, because evidently they can recreate them now. But yeah, it's maybe as rare as an endangered species.
I think to me what it really spoke to was the idea of like science, the scientific method, and the people who are skeptics, who I am, I'm a skeptic, but I'm also a believer. Mm-hmm. The real skeptics, or the people who are set out to disprove, or if it can't meet the scientific method standards, it's not real. It speaks to that. Like, this is an experience that I had. It was real. You can't tell me it wasn't real because I was there, you know. And so that to me was the reassuring part of, you don't have to always have, you don't even have to always have evidence to have a great experience. I mean, we've had plenty of things where we investigate that, like, the entire team looking into a mirror and seeing the same thing in the mirror. We don't have it on camera. We don't have it on tape. We don't have it on anything. We all saw it. We have no evidence except the stories that we tell each other and the way that we walk forward with that experience and go, that happened. And that's evidence enough for me.
Well, and keep in mind too, Frankie, and we've stated it multiple times on this program, there's a huge difference between a skeptic and a cynic, right? And you're far from a cynic. A cynic will tell you absolutely never, would never happen, not in a million years. Penn Jillette is a cynic. He's the new amazing Randy. And he, I mean, he's coming to town, hopefully still in August. He was supposed to be here for the it's supposed to be Penn and Teller. They're supposed to be at the Renaissance Festival to celebrate their 50th anniversary or whatever it is. But he'd be the first one to tell you, I don't do paranormal shows because I don't believe in the paranormal. So why waste my time? Why should I talk about anything that I don't believe exists? Cynic, right? Never take the $1 million challenge from the Randy Foundation because you're not going to win. It's a waste of time.
Yeah.
Cynics. But a skeptic will have a healthy attitude and tell you, it's not that I don't believe, it's that you have to show me the factors. You have to show me what it is. You have to be able to duplicate it in a lab in order for me to believe it. You have to, you know,
just think it's a little silly to be a cynic when, you know, I could talk to Penn Jillette and go, 100 years ago, if I told you I could play the voice of a dead person and you would hear it, you'd be like, no way. But now I listen to Spotify every day, and I listen to Elvis, and I listen to, mm-hmm. you know, these people who are no longer with us, and we hear their voices. We hear the voices of dead people.
Yeah.
It's just a technology now.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
And I also think it's really important to remember that for us as a team, our interest isn't in proving ourselves or proving our ability to capture evidence. Do we do it? Yes, but it's for ourselves because it's to remind us of our lived experience. And I think that there's just a shift in mindset overall that it's really about the experience. That's mm-hmm. what we wanted to put into the festival as well. It's about our lived experience. It's about the things that we felt or saw or our way of interpreting things. And we don't feel the need that we have to prove ourselves with that. I know that when I first came into the scene, I was with a team that they really, really pushed us to be so strict about the way that we captured evidence, the way we processed it, all of that, because it was so important to our team leader that we were proving that we were doing something. And I learned so many wonderful skills from them, and I cherish that because I know I have that ability to do it. But the most incredible times I had starting out as an investigator were my lived experience, the things that I actually was a part of. Did we get lucky enough to capture some of those? Yes, we did, and they were amazing. But had we not, does it matter to me? No. I think I just had that moment of connection with the other side, and that was incredible and good enough for me. And if someone meets me and I tell them the story and I don't have a recording to play back to them and they choose not to believe me, well, fine. I don't have a problem with that. But if you want to share your story with me, I would much rather have us have that interaction.
Right. Well, and here's the great hurdle, Christina, is this. In the age of YouTube and people yelling fake, chances are most people who want to, no offense here, Frankie, but most people who want to claim they're a skeptic aren't going to believe you anyways. Mm-hmm. And they're going to call your evidence into question, and they're going to, pardon the language again, shit all over it. Mm-hmm. And you're going to, you know, most of the time, anybody who's going to want to try and question you is going to have a, you know, get their jollies, you know, calling you into question and running you through the ringer. They're going to do it whether they, you know, you want them to or not.
Yeah.
Right.
And there are a lot of people who love to shit all over people's evidence anyways and think it's a hobby or their second job, one or the other.
Yeah.
And it's just an exercise in futility. So really, like you stated, Christina, I guess I'm giving this the second runaround, is first of all, do it for the experience that you're about to have. Second, do it to prove to yourself that there's something out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And third, do it for the enjoyment of yourself and your teammates.
Yeah. For the connection. It's like, you know, being at the Roth Clifton House, I feel closer to all those humans I spent the weekend with than ever. I mean, our team I already felt close with, but we are even closer now. Nick and Noe from Quite Unusual and Catherine from Ice Cream, Ice Cream. I've spent time with them in different areas, but now I feel even closer because we shared these really deep connected moments. And to me, like, that is absolutely what this is about. It's the antidote for being online and people shit all over everything.
Yeah. And, you know, but I think, again, it's not a huge group, but there's just this minority that would just as soon try to ruin your day by shooting down this great experience you've had rather than celebrate it and say, hey, you know what? Good job. Great catch. Mm-hmm. You know, it takes 2 seconds to say, hey, great catch, great story, than to take 10, 20 minutes trying to convince you that, you know, oh, what you caught was bullshit. You know, well, why can't you just sit down and listen to the story and go, hey, that's pretty interesting.
Ultimately, we're never going to feel seen and connected if we aren't actually connecting with people in a healthy way and giving people the ability to also be seen. So the people who choose to live in that space of trying to turn eyes away or downplay someone's experience, anything like that, they're also just crying out to be seen.
Yeah,
they're just choosing to do it in an unhealthy way.
Yeah.
So there's going to be those people in every single situation you walk into. And I think they're in every world of hobby or interest that people come across, no matter what our ages are, from young to old, and from 32 to 60,
yeah,
we shall
say. From 32 to 60, you're right, Christina.
Yeah,
I can't imagine who's in that age group. But
there's always kind of, you know, there's always bullies. There's always people who just have to be difficult, right? It doesn't go away.
Yeah.
And there's also always going to be people who you just don't click with, don't understand. And that includes the other side. So it happens. Sure. The best thing you can do is just be like, okay, that's not for me, but, you know, I wish you the best. Or that's the best way to look at it. And really, truly, cheer for someone if they're happy, right?
Yeah.
That's it comes across the entire situation, no matter what interest you have. So, yeah, those people will always exist.
That's true. Can't
get away from it.
That's true.
They're not my people.
That's true. Not mine either. All right. I said we weren't getting out of here until I got a David Bowie story. Who's got it?
I don't have a David Bowie story.
Well, Frankie. Okay. So because most of my life is in the burlesque world, I started doing research to try and see where the burlesque history and the occult and paranormal and all that stuff might be making some crossovers, just to see if I could come up with something that I could contribute in a book or a podcast or whatever, right? And so I was talking to a friend of mine, Abbott Collar, who wrote a book on Gypsy Rose Lee, who was very famous, like probably the most famous burlesque dancer of all time.
Yep.
She was in movies, and the musical Gypsy is about her life. And she goes, well, you know, Gypsy scared the shit out of David Bowie. I was like, what? So apparently, Bowie bought a home that was formerly Gypsy's.
Hmm.
And this was, okay, granted, this was in like his cocaine and like real society, sort of that whole era of his life where he was right. You know, he was into Hitler, the whole, like, not a great mind space for the, you know, for David. But so he bought this house, and then he found out that Gypsy, who was a practicing occultist as well, it turns out, I'm learning, had drawn a giant pentagram in one of the rooms that was above the indoor pool. And it freaked him out. So he called, there's a woman that worked for his management company called Cherry Vanilla, who also incidentally ran one of the world's first phone sex companies. But she worked for his management company, and she was like his connection in the occult world. If he had a problem, he would call her and she would know who to talk to. So she hired, what was her name? Wally Elmlark or Imlark, something like that, who ran the occult school in New York. And she told him all the stuff that he needed to do to get rid of, because he thought that the devil was in his house.
Hmm.
So she prescribed this whole thing for him to do to exorcise the devil from the estate. And what ended up happening was it caused the swimming pool during this moment they were doing to like boil over, and, you know, like just all this activity. And David Bowie claims that the devil came out of the pool. And after that, there was a stain on the bottom of the pool that they say it was either like the devil's head or like a gargoyle or whatever. There's documented trouble selling the property because of this stain that will not be clean. Like, they come in, they clean it, they drain all the water, and they clean it, they pour the water back in, and it comes back. And so I love that there's this, because I'm a fan of Gypsy, I'm a fan of Bowie, fan of the occult and all this stuff. And so the idea that like those two worlds crossed in a way that just makes me incredibly happy. I'm also a TV and film writer, so I'm like, is this a thing I can write? Like, I'm so excited about this story.
Yeah. No, it's a cool story.
That's super cool.
Although you gotta wonder how many drugs were going through. I mean, the stain was physically there. I get that. It, but how many drugs were going through Bowie's system when he saw the devil coming out of the pool. I mean, you know.
I also feel like if she was irritated.
Like
two,
yeah.
Like I could see her being like, oh, I'm going to show this guy.
Yeah. I think for like 2 years, he existed on like cocaine and like peppers. And so one other thing, like this like really awful diet. And that's like all he ate for like an extended period of time.
Oh my
so
God.
That might have contributed, but.
Jeez, that's the holy cow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's not a healthy diet.
No.
That's for sure. Well, folks, we're coming to the end of the program here. I'll tell you, any last things you want to get in here before we start to wrap up here? I feel like
I just hope that we see everyone. And if you can't make it in person, we do have what we are calling remote viewing tickets, which are virtual tickets. So we were calling it live stream. I'm going to just step in and say this here. And we decided to change and shift and call it virtual because you can purchase this and watch it later. So we will be streaming everything but the prom, I believe.
Yeah, I like that remote viewing. That's I like that better than live stream. Live stream, remote viewing.
Yeah, that was Christina's husband. He texted me. It was. And was like, how did we not think of that?
Right. Yeah, he comes like running into the room and he goes, you guys are really missing something. And I'm like, what? And he's like, remote viewing tickets.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, you better text Frankie right now.
Yeah, that's a better term.
Well, yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, I like that idea. Yeah, because
it was really important to us that if people can't make it in person, that they can still be a part of the experience.
Well, again, because you guys have a really, really cool lineup here. I think I wouldn't want folks to miss any of your lineup because they couldn't get to the Windy City, in that time of year, and really. You know, in the heart of the summer, sometimes it's hard for people to get away, especially if you've got, kids or whatever, and you want to be able to show up.
Yeah. We'd love to see in person because we love getting to know people, but we understand that not everyone can make it. I mean, this city in the summer is unmatched.
Yeah.
It's just the energy is wild, but. Join us however you can. We just want everyone to have a seat at the seance.
I see what you did there. Windy City Paranormal Festival is where it's at, June 12th through the 15th. You can get your tickets at windycityparafest.com. If you can't remember that, we have a link in the description of this program, and we encourage you to come out and have some fun.
Use darkness for 10% off any of the tickets.
There you go. Wow. Thank you so much, Frankie. Appreciate that.
Well, thank you.
Frankie Everly, Christina Rappel, appreciate you being on the program today, and good luck with this. I wish you much success, I guess I'll be tuning in online. I might drop by. You never know.
Come by. We'd love to see you.
Please. Oh, we would love that.
You never know. Maybe I'll sneak in. You might see me in tassels and I might dance on stage. You never know. Hey, I got a few moves. They're one legged, but you never know.
That's all right.
Thank you so much, Tim.
You're very welcome. Folks, a couple of reminders for you before we leave today. The Darkness Radio Apple app is available right now. The update's available as well. If you haven't updated it, update it right now. Go to your iOS store, your Apple store, and do so. Also, the store at darknessradioshow.com is open, and go support the show by getting something from there. Also, our executive producer for today's show is Troy Palmer. Troy, thank you for everything you do. And get your Parishare stories in for Supernatural News and Parishare. Tim at darknessradio.com. Send your stories in there as well. Be a light in someone's darkness this weekend. Go help a disabled member of your community or an elderly member of your community. It's springtime. There's cleanup to be done. Go find someone in your community to help. Go be a light in someone's darkness this weekend. For Beer City Bruiser, for Jess, for Mally, I'm Tim Dennis. Thank you so much for watching and listening to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.